Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Above Politics Show. I'm Homer Fyfe.
And I'm Martin Bain, and it certainly is good to have you back. Whilst Budsky did a great job last week, it's good to have you back.
It's good to be back, Martin, and I'll tell you, I'm finally feeling like a human being again, and back on my feet, and hopefully we're going to get a rant out of me this week, too, for those of you that have missed it.
I'm sure they'll be now sitting there thinking, going to have to listen to the whole show now, but yes, we will be getting a rant, but I certainly wanted to kick off with what's been going on off the Horn of Africa and the piracy attempt on the Maersk Alabama, which all of a sudden, from looking at some of the US news websites, they seem to be interested in piracy off the coast of Somalia.
Yeah, and like we spoke earlier, it's kind of fascinating that this has been going on for 5 years with something like 150 ships. Taken, and all of a sudden now, since a United States ship, actually leased the United States, was taken, this becomes a hot topic issue because it's all over every news source. And it is a fascinating story.
And it is. I mean, for those who don't know, that the there are, I think, 6 ships, I stand to be corrected, that are leased from, I believe, the Maersk shipping line, that are leased to the DOD for them to ship parts and supplies across the world, and that Somali pirates decided to go after the Maersk Alabama, and many people are saying this is the first time that an American ship, now I'm trying to find out whether it's actually an American flagged ship or an American crewed ship. It is an American crewed ship, but whether it is flagged under the United States is a different matter. But it's the first time, I think, for almost 200 years that an American ship has had an attempt of piracy on it.
And I think it's also fascinating to note the fact that the 20 merchant marines that were on apparently fought back. And I'm assuming this is the first time that's happened.
It does seem to be, with what's gone on there. I mean, I think you have to beg the question as to, you know, how much military training have some of these people had? You know, if they are working for the DOD, you know, taking supplies around the world, you'd like to think they may have had some training anyway, because they may go into some fairly hostile environments.
I will be surprised if this doesn't come out to be one of the movies of the week. I mean, when you take a look at this, you've got a captain that escapes. Makes an escape attempt, jumps into a lifeboat, and goes away from the ship. Then the hostage takers threaten the lives of the crew, so he comes back in order to save the life of the crew. And now the ship is apparently being shadowed by several United States warships. I mean, this is absolutely fascinating.
Oh, yeah, and you're right. It will, no doubt, in the next 12 months, probably make, you know, a TV movie, and who knows, it may even make a full film movie. But I just think it is interesting that, you know, because an American ship has been taken hostage, suddenly everybody in America now seems interested in this one, and they're jumping up and down, and more ships are being sent to the region. Now, I've got to turn around and say, you know, it's a huge area that these pirates operate in. For those of you, here's an opportunity. Go and get your atlases out, have a look, and find what's called the Horn of Africa, which is basically an area that sort of on the north has got Yemen. Then on the sort of west side, it's got Somalia, Kenya, Tanzania, and then sort of probably out into the Indian Ocean. And we're talking of a huge area that, yeah, even if you had 200 ships, I don't think you would stop piracy. I think the only way you can stop piracy here is to do exactly what was done, you know, hundreds of years ago with the Barbary, you know, with the Barbary Coast. Sorry, you have to send international forces in there, and they just have to destroy the bases these pirates operate from.
And obviously, their bases are somewhere. If you take a look at, and I would invite the listeners here to take a look at the map that's present on the BBC News site, it very clearly shows the 2008 attacks and 2009 attacks. And Exactly what you said, Martin. The Gulf of Aden is a huge area, and there's been literally dozens of attacks in that area. And so these are pretty. These pirates are a fairly successful group of people that are operating, I guess, for years, making this a way of life.
It is, but I think we ought to delve a little deeper and say why all of a sudden has an American ship been targeted? Now it could just be fate that at some stage an American ship was going to be targeted, but we have to look that these are Somali pirates. During the Clinton administration, he did authorize cruise missile attacks on what were regarded as terrorist training bases in Somalia. You only have to look at the American peacekeeping attempts in sort of Mogadishu, how all that sort of is ingrained into the US psyche of those pictures of dead US troops being dragged through the streets and butchered, and is also the backdrop for the Black Hawk Down films. So you have to think, is there anything to this? Is this purely chance, or has someone basically said maybe we ought to take an American ship because that's going to be worth so much more money?
Well, I think there's a lot of strange things to this, and I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. One of the things I'm reading here is that, of course, the FBI is negotiating for the release of the captain and the crew. But it said that one of the things the pirates want, besides a hefty ransom, is now listen to this. They want compensation for a boat that was wrecked in the attack. Now, that doesn't sound to me like just a group of patch-wearing, parrot on the shoulder, peg leg individuals out here taking over ships. This is an organized, again, like I said, successful group of individuals who are out here doing coordinated attacks on major shipping.
I can't disagree with you. I mean, in the past, this subject's probably been certainly profiled in the United Kingdom. Purely because they've had British Navy ships out in this region. But yet this is a business. There's no getting away from it. These pirates, they are running a business. These are the front end of, these are the go-getters of the pirate business. They then have base camps. They then have financial people, and then people who will then work with intermediaries who work with the shipping line. So this is a business that's worth, if not tens of millions of dollars a year, hundreds of millions of dollars a year, because these people are doing this because they get paid to release ships. No getting away from it. That's what's been happening. Ransoms have been paid to release ships.
Because the large corporations are going to pay the ransom. They're not going to risk losing the as you said, tens or $100 million ships. They're just going to pay the ransom and get the ship released.
And unfortunately, I think what we need to do is go back, and we need to start saying to the government in Somalia and potentially into, even down into Ethiopia a little bit. I mean, Ethiopia doesn't actually border onto the Indian Ocean, but it certainly borders onto the Gulf of Aden. So you've got to be sort of thinking, hang on a minute. Yes, we should be out there dealing with this. We should just be saying to these guys, you've got 1 week to stop this, otherwise... Yeah. And you're trying to tell me that the American military doesn't know where all these bases are. I find that hard to believe.
Oh, absolutely, because if you take a look again at the map, you'll see that a majority of these attacks by the pirates have occurred in and around Yemen. And now Yemen is one of the United States' most staunch supporters in the area. But there again, as we touched on when me and you talked before, that's where the USS Cole was attacked. And, this is a hotspot area. And I think that what we're going to see coming up here soon is these pirates have made a huge mistake, because, yes, it is a large area. But when you start talking about the resources that the United States Navy can put into that area and start doing some enforcement, I think we're going to see a whole lot more activity over there now.
That will be certainly very interesting. And we've certainly seen a fair bit of activity in the United Kingdom fairly recently. We've had some terrorist raids or raids by anti-terrorism officers, certainly in the United Kingdom. There's been talk of that there is an Al-Qaeda bomb factory somewhere in the northwest of the United Kingdom, and there were going to be some attacks over Easter. I just think it's it's an example of intelligence and police having to make harsh decisions. From my personal point of view, if you have to do this, you have to do this. And I'm sure people will complain because a vast majority of the people arrested are of Pakistani origin who are strangely in this country on student visas. And there's already press reports that at least one person who is in this country on a student visa, they've checked with his college and they've never seen him. He came to one lesson and that's it. So I have to wonder about him. Why we allow these people in if we don't keep an eye on them?
I was actually going to call you and ask if you'd actually gotten searched. Because apparently they're turning your country upside down here. And I think the real story is exactly what you said. This student visa thing harkens back to our experiences in September 11th. These people are coming into our country legally. And see, that's the problem. They're getting through the system on a legal basis. Then they're coming into these countries and they're doing these illegal actions. Apparently this was going to be quite the devastating attack that was planned in Manchester, which I'm not familiar exactly where that's at, but I'm assuming it's a very large metropolitan area. Am I correct?
It certainly is. People would argue about whether it's the second or third city in the United Kingdom. Those from Birmingham would probably say they are, but it's certainly a very large metropolitan area. I think it would be fair to say it's either the second or third largest city in the United Kingdom.
So what we're talking about here is potentially your September 11th came right up close to happening, and thank goodness your intelligence officials were on the ball and caught this before it happened. But how close did they get?
Well, I think there's also another issue here that these raids had to be brought forward because it seems that a lot of raids on terrorists like this normally take place at 4 o'clock in the 4 o'clock in the morning, which is a time when people are sort of at their lowest ebb. It's very easy to take terrorists at that time. But these raids had to be brought forward because the head of the Metropolitan Police's anti-terrorism unit, Bob Quick, was photographed going into number 10 Downing Street to brief the Home Secretary and the Prime Minister with the details of this operation facing outwards to all the media. And they use some fairly large telephoto lenses and they zoomed in on Bob Quick, and you can in some pictures quite clearly see details of this operation and a piece of paper that's got secret on it. Now,
don't you guys have briefcases over there?
Strangely, you're right. There's loads of Budsky and I spoke about expenses, MPs' expenses last week, that we can afford to pay for MPs to have two homes and have them equipped, yet we cannot, it appears, pay for our senior anti-terrorism officer in the Metropolitan Police to have, even to have a shop plastic bag even would have been better. But
you're
a bag
from Walmart to have stuff in.
Exactly.
Cover it up.
Exactly. Now, and Budsky and I spoke last week about accountability. Bob Quick, he's taken account of his actions and he's resigned. No arguments.
Exactly. He did the right thing. He stepped up. He said, I screwed up, and he resigned. Now, I'm not, I didn't get into this too much with you offline, but I'm not 100% sure resigning was the right thing to do. Okay, he made a mistake. That's fine. But is Bob Quick still the best man for the job? Did resigning, is it going to hurt the anti-terror organization by him resigning? If he's still the best man for the job, I can't see a mistake causing him that position.
But you have to think, here is a man that deal, but it comes down to a question of confidence from our behalf, but then also a confidence no doubt coming from the Prime Minister, from the Home Secretary, and from other senior officials, not only in the Metropolitan Police but in the British Secret Service, and let's be brutal, even in our allies' secret services, they would have to turn around and say, is this a man we can trust? Clearly he made a mistake. This is a man that must deal and see some very sensitive information every working day. It should be ingrained in him. Security, security, security. Yes, he made what to many of us would appear to be a simple mistake. but hang on a minute, how can you trust the guy now, knowing full well that he got out of a car and he walked down Downing Street in front of the, you know, press from the United Kingdom and probably other countries, and had a document on absolute display that had secret on it that was talking about this operation? You're right. In essence, that single incident isn't that serious, but it's the implications of, if I was, you know, working with him from MI5, MI6, from the CIA, from the FBI, would I be able to look at this man and think, I'm about to give him a piece of paper that's classified, that's come from a very sensitive source, can I trust him? And I think that's the reason he resigned, not because he's bad at his job, is because he would have lost the confidence of his peers and of those people he has to work with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it's not the first time this has happened either. I mean, back in May, you had two government ministers that were photographed carrying sensitive materials that could be seen. Caroline Flint apparently was holding a document.
So, I mean, you're right. It could be that he is the best man for the job, but I think he's done the right thing by saying, hang on a minute, you know, this was an unquestionable failure of his, you know, personal security. And I have to say, I think he's done the right job. It could be that maybe in 6 months' time he'll be rehabilitated and come back into the role. And who knows? He will certainly still be involved in security and, you know, and anti-terrorism operations. It's just that, let's be brutal, he probably won't be fronting it anymore. He won't be the man that's going to be on the TV saying, this is what we've done.
But now, here's something I want to kind of step back a little bit. The same issue we're discussing, but something just caught my eye. Here we have Pakistan criticizing the British immigration system, but they have now offered to help Britain with their security checks on foreign students. Now, hold on a second, okay? Talk about the fox guarding the hen house, all right? Pakistan has its own problems when you're talking about the Mumbai bombings.
You have to talk about, you know, the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, you know, people who have, you know, tried to come back. You know, have to look at the attack on the Sri Lankan cricket team. You're right. In, you know, Pakistan is a staunch ally of, you know, the UK and the US in the war on terror. But yeah, it has some big problems locally. A lot of people in the Pashtun regions of Pakistan that border Afghanistan are probably very pro-Taliban, are, you know, very, you know, fundamental Muslims, believe that, you know, that is, you know, that the words of the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad are those to be strictly adhered to.
And here this guy, Waheed Samsul Hassan, who's Pakistan's high commissioner to the United Kingdom, he's saying that Britain's not doing enough to prevent bogus applications for foreign student status. Now, I would present to you that maybe they need to clean their own house before they start criticizing Great Britain.
I agree, but the other thing that would happen is if we were too harsh, we would then get the do-gooder lefties, human rights, civil rights lawyers, and I have to be fairly brutal and say I think most of these people are parasites, and, you know, come the day I'm in charge, they're going to be up against the wall. But they would be moaning, oh, this isn't fair, you know, we're victimizing everybody from Pakistan. Unfortunately, I don't think we can win. We can't win in this argument if we have greater security and greater control of who comes into the United Kingdom. The, you know, civil rights do-gooders will turn around and say, "Oh, but, you know, you're victimizing people." And if
right,
we don't,
because they tie your hands with this the BS that they throw out about profiling. You're talking about these liberal people. Well, they don't want you to profile, but how can you not profile when the 12 people arrested, 10 of them were Pakistan nationals who were students? Do you understand what I'm saying here? I'm following along with you with these do-good liberals, but they're tying our hands. And then the minute something happens, let's say this bomb would have went off in Manchester, how many thousands it would have killed, are they also going to step up and say, well, why didn't you do more? Well, yeah, we couldn't do more because you're tying our hands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what's going to happen here. And yeah, unfortunately, it's probably an unenviable balance that, you know, the Home Secretary and those responsible for the security and also the border agency have to put up with. And there's probably a balancing act that someone's always thinking about as well. Can I actually stop this person from coming into this country? If I do, am I going to get done? But interesting, I heard on the radio that a significant number of applications for students, that these have to be made in Pakistan. You cannot arrive in the UK and say, by the way, I'd like a student visa. You have to apply for this in Pakistan, at the British High Commission in varying cities in Pakistan, that a significant number of them still get refused straight away, and then some of them get overturned with, you know, at an appeal stage. I think what's going to happen is that we're just going to tighten up on this one, and no doubt people will complain. And what will happen is that these students, and the worst thing is there are probably going to be a lot of serious students who want to come to the United Kingdom, and probably in the States, you probably get a lot of students from Pakistan who say, you know, I want to go to the UK and the US because some of their educational facilities are the best in the world and I want to get the best possible education I can. And we can't fault them for that one, but I'm afraid it will probably be clamped on and less of them will come to this country. And those that come here will have to work harder to prove that they have a legitimate reason to come to the United Kingdom to study.
And I'm sorry, I have no sympathy for that at all. Okay? If you want to come to this country, if you want to come to the United Kingdom, then you need to prove yourself. And I have no sympathy for that at all. And the few that get kicked to the curb that are good people, well, hey, that's just the way life is nowadays. And I'm sorry, I have no sympathy on it at all.
And I can't disagree with you, because, you know, one day, you know, we might be talking about something, an event equivalent to your 9/11, which I'm sure is something that will no doubt make the boards on abovetopsecret.com go absolutely crazy. And, you know, yeah. And then from a personal point of view, while, you know, we'll be then calling our government and our ministers to account to say, well, why did you allow this to happen? And I think these guys are almost in a lose-lose situation. There's nothing that they can actually do. If they become too draconian, we're going to say, you know, you're going to have people saying, ah, oh, you're taking people's rights away. But if we open the doors up, you're going to have other people saying, well, where are my rights? And I just think it's just an incredible balancing act. And sometimes I suspect they get it wrong.
Well, and now talking about students, I want to address something that's happening over here in the United States. Apparently, President Obama has moved forward with House Resolution 1444, which states that these students here in the United States need to do a certain amount of mandatory community service. Now, look, you know, this is the most ridiculous thing. We are a free country, and I agree with community service, and I encouraged my daughters to go out and to do what they could for their communities. But you cannot mandate this sort of thing in a free country. And if you do, I mean, this is conscription. That's all it is. We are conscripting our young people and forcing them to go out and do volunteerism. How can you force somebody to volunteer?
But if you look around the world, there are countries around the world who are democratic, and a good example is Israel. Everybody, every person who comes out of school, out of a certain age, goes to do some kind of national or state service, be it in the military or in some other field. If people say, no, I do not want to join the military.
We're not Israel, and we don't want to be Israel. We don't want to be any of those other countries. We like who we are. And what's aggravating me and what gets me fired up over this is this administration is steady changing who we are. We've been successful. Now, granted, we're in an economic downturn right now, but you cannot take away from the success the United States has had being exactly who we are.
If you have a look at, you know, and a lot of people have made the comparison to Barack Obama, to JFK, you think about one of his most legendary speeches was, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And if you think about it, he is doing something similar here by saying to the youth, the young people, you know, your country has spent umpteen tens, even hundreds of thousands of dollars in educating you. What's to stop the government or the people of this country turning around and saying, okay, we'd like you to give something back and do some service locally in your local communities to, you know, just make them better places?
Mm. I can also give you quotes from Adolf Hitler about his brown-shirted youths, too.
And
that doesn't make it right. It's exactly the same concept.
You and I, we're both clever people. We can go and find, you know, statements from many people to justify our arguments either way. You know, I suppose I don't have a problem with people who have come out of college before they go to work making an attempt to do some community service. I think what maybe Barack Obama's tried to do here is to turn around and say that there's such a small number of people who will do this voluntarily. And in your situation, you know, you encouraged your children to do that. But I wonder how many American parents would encourage their children, maybe between leaving high school and going to college, to actually say, hey, guess what? I'm going to support you for 6 months, 9 months, a year. But I want you to go out and do something to improve this community. I suspect you are a very, very small majority of American parents who would actually encourage their children to do it. The vast majority of them would say, yeah, whatever.
Here's the problem, okay? The problem isn't the service. The problem isn't volunteerism. The problem is the United States government stepping in where it doesn't belong. Because what you have here is a responsibility that falls directly on the shoulders of the parents. If it doesn't fall on the parents, then it falls on the community. And now you've got a federal government who is out of control, who is stepping into our private lives and is again trying to tell us what we can and what we cannot do. And this is just, it's out of control and it's ridiculous. And what makes it ridiculous is the fact that we are a free country and the responsibility lies with the parents. If the federal government wants to start some sort of a social awareness program to get parents to encourage their children to do this, I'm all for that. But the federal government should stay out of my business and out of my family and stop telling my children what they can and cannot do and stop telling me what I should and should not do with my children.
And I don't disagree with that. But when both the House and Senate pass this, your elected officials who have been voted on by the American people have decided that this is a piece of legislation that they want to pass, and then at some stage they will become accountable to the US electorate. So your elected officials have said, we're happy to vote on this.
And that's the problem, isn't it? Because what we have now is we have liberals in the House, we have liberals in the Senate, and we have a liberal administration. And the difficulty comes at the fact that when legislation is passed, one of the most difficult things to do is to unpass that legislation. So they get this stuff in place. So even if the country wakes up, which I have my doubts about, and votes these liberals out, which is what needs to happen in the next 2 years, are they going to be able to go back and say, okay, House Resolution 1444 was a bad idea and we need to rescind that? Probably not, because once legislation gets in, the American public becomes complacent and they're like, well, okay, we've been doing it for a couple of years now, let's keep doing it. And we are slowly but surely losing our rights. They are being eroded away from us, and it's just going to get worse before it gets better. And I'm telling you, I said it before, I'll say it again. When they voted these people in office, I said I would say I told you so, and I'm saying it, I told you so.
And if you want to agree or disagree with what Homer is saying on House Resolution 1444, you know what to do. Come and find the show thread and post away. But generally, if you want to agree or disagree with anything we've spoken about today, and we've touched on piracy, we've touched on bomb-making factories and student visas in the United Kingdom, and we've touched on mandatory volunteerism in the U.S., come and find the show threads, because we're coming close to time. And it's certainly good to have you back on the show, Homer, and we're looking forward to your rant.
Thank you, Martin, and it's good to be back. You have no idea. I've missed the show, and I want to personally thank Budsky for stepping in. What an absolutely great member he is, and an asset to AboveTopSecret.com and the Above Politics Show.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to the Above Politics Show. I am Martin Bain.
And I'm still Homer Fife.
And we'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.
This is Homer Fife, and this is just the way I see it. Conscription or forced volunteering? What's the difference? When did the government assume the job of raising our children? When did we give them the power to tell us what is best for our children? Now, some of you may stand up and say that, okay, a lot of parents aren't doing a good job of raising their children. Who are you? Who is Obama? Who is anyone to tell parents what's best for our children? Now, I'm not talking about abuse or neglect or other reasons why we would take children away from parents. I'm talking about just plain parenting. So, Obama wants to force our youngsters to volunteer their time on civic programs. Forced volunteering. Now, that's a pure oxymoron and a direct cut into our freedom. Okay, volunteering is good for kids, no doubt, but this isn't volunteering. Not in any way, shape, or form. See, this is the feds holding money over the school's heads to make the kids perform labor. You don't believe me? Listen to what he said. I will set a goal for all American middle and high school students. This is Obama. High school students to perform 50 hours of service a year. We'll reach this goal in several ways. At the middle and high school level, we'll make federal assistance conditional on school districts developing service programs. Okay, so here's what happens. If the schools don't fall in line, they don't get the federal money. Well, most schools are broke anyway, and they can't make it without federal money, so they have to do this. And if the kids don't do what the school says, they don't get to graduate. If you ever doubted it before, folks, here it is. Here is the death knell for the United States of America. Here you are watching our freedom disappear right before your eyes. Let me tell you right now, I raised two kids. Both are in college. One's going to become a wildlife biologist, and the other one's going to teach music. And both of them know the value of volunteering, and they did it because it made them feel good. They didn't do it because they were ordered to. They didn't do it because Obama said they had to do it. They did it because it was the right thing to do, and that's the only reason to volunteer. I'm telling you, that this is going insane. And if something doesn't stop, we're going to lose this country. This is Homer Fife, and it's just the way I see it.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at AbovePolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.